So good morning, good morning. I just wanted to stop in and say to you all this morning, first of all, I am grateful to just be here today. I'm grateful to be alive, healthy. I'm just grateful to be here. I'm grateful for family. I'm grateful for life. I'm grateful for all things. But I just wanted to share with you all real quick that I had a little episode this week, and it just really took me aback. And when I woke up this morning, I said, you know what? First thing I did was I have this routine where I pick up my computer, I check my emails, I check my phone for text messages, missed calls. And this morning when I woke up, I started my little routine, and then something said, you know what? Nope. I had not yet even realized that it was Good Friday, but I just decided, you know what? Not today. I'm not doing no homework. I'm not doing no work. I'm not talking about COVID-19. I'm not doing any of that. I just declared that today was the day that the Lord had made, and I will rejoice and be glad in it. And that's what I intend to do. And I'm extending mine beyond just today. I'm extending mine this entire weekend. I'm just going to be at home. And I'm going to just love on my baby. I'm going to just enjoy me and love on me and just enjoy life and just be grateful. And this is a time of the year my family always get together. Maybe not all of us, but a group of us is always together. And we're not going to be able to do that physically. So I got up this morning and I did a massive group text to my family. And I suggested that we do a Zoom. We set a time that we're all going to have dinner. I'm going to send out a Zoom invite, and we're all going to have dinner together via Zoom. We're going to even play some games. We're going to create, I created some for Christmas time that we didn't get to use. So we'll use them right now for Corona time. So we're going to play some games, and we're just going to enjoy seeing each other, because being in the house, you don't get to see each other. You may talk to each other, but you don't get to see each other. So we're going to get to see each other's faces. And so I brought this to you because that just reminded me. Bring some joy, to bring some joy. We're learning to live differently in these times. So this is some new time. So we're gonna get real creative, right? And we are going to do some things that we haven't never done. So we're going to explore, and we're going to be adventurous and inventive, and we're going to be together in spite of, because we none of us know. We worried about coronavirus, but coronavirus is not the only thing that can kill us. We're all going to go at one time or another, but that's not the only thing that can kill us, okay? So we're not going to get so caught up in coronavirus that we forget all the other things, right? So, and we're not going to even focus on any of that. We're going to live in the moment. We're going to enjoy right here, right now, for what we have, because there are many people fighting for their lives today, right now. So we're going to keep those people in prayer, and we're going to continue to push forward to make it through this time of isolation. And we're going to live for better times to come, because these are not bad times. Let's not get that wrong. These are not bad times. Some of us are seeing our children that we don't normally get to see and spend time with. Okay, so these are not bad times. These are great times. Parents are able to now stop and spend some precious times and create some precious memories with their children. So this coronavirus is not the worst thing that could happen to the isolation part. It's not the worst thing that could happen to us. So for some of us, we're rekindling relationships and building relationships and mending relationships. So yeah, we're just gonna look for the good in it. How about that? And I'm just suggesting or encouraging you all to do the same. Be creative, be inventive. You may not want to see or chat or Zoom, or you may not be savvy with doing electronic stuff. That's fine. Write a letter to a family member that you haven't talked to in a while. Set the time, set a reminder on your phone to give that person a call. on sometime this weekend or sometimes in the upcoming days, I'd advise you not to put it off too long, because you're not supposed to put things off, because not the very next second is not promised. I almost didn't come on here to even send this message. So that tells you right there, this message is for someone. And I hope that it inspires someone to do something different and just to venture out and do something great today. Or sometimes this weekend, or sometime during the quarantine and we're all confined to our homes. So with that, thank you very much for listening. I hope that you all enjoy this weekend. I'm already enjoying it. I'm enjoying just knowing that I was obedient and came and sent this message out to someone that needed to hear it. And hopefully it'll bring a bright spot to somebody's day. After all, what is life worth living if you never put a smile on someone's face or touch their heart in a special way that's memorable and lasting, you know? All right, everyone, be safe. Have a good weekend. No COVID-19 this weekend. Declare it with me. Have a great one. Good evening, everyone. This is In the Now. I am Marlene, your host. And with me on this podcast, I have Kelly, I have Rennie, I have Michelle, and I have Ralph. And we've come in together today to discuss some of the current events that's going on in the world today. So here in Baltimore, we had an experience where one of the very well-known crab distributors here in Baltimore, which, you know, Merlin is known for crabs. And this is crab season. It is just coming and it's strong and it's in full effect. And people spend lots of money every year on crabs, right? So we woke up this morning with this. Well, I woke up in the middle of the night myself, and I'm scrolling on social media, and I see an post where someone said that the owner of Vince Crabs was saying that he made these racist comments. And so I immediately went to the page, and there it was. And he had all of these different posts, and he had his family, his friends, and different people chimed in on the comment, and it was very offensive. It was very offensive. Let me just say that. It was very offensive, and it bothered me, and it bothered me deeper than just what he said, because it's not like it's something that's not the norm. It's not something that we've never heard before, but it was shocking because you would think if you were smart enough to have an establishment, and I think he has like 3 or 5 different locations. I know it's 5 locations of Vince's, but I don't know if he owned all 3. But I know he owned 3 of them at least. If you're smart enough to have a business, and I know he's making lots of money, you are not smart enough to know you can't come on a social media platform and post just anything, especially during a time when the world is in an uproar. The whole country is in an uproar over all the different turns of events of Black people being murdered at the hands of people who are supposed to be protecting us, right? So that's what I want to talk to you guys about today. Where do we go from here? What does it look like going forward in the, not just the African-American community, but I want to focus on us today, but as a whole, as a country, as a world, where do we go from here? But to narrow it down, where do African-Americans go from here? Because what I saw was disturbing for me, because it was not organized. It was just people in raw emotion, and they just started acting off of that emotion. So I want y'all to chime in with me and help me figure out where do we go from here, because that wasn't
the way to me. I think we should have, well, I'm going to reserve my opinion for as we have this discussion. So anybody who wants to go first and share your opinion of where do you think we go from here?
I'll go first.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, first, in my opinion, let's say we decide to boycott, like people talk about boycotting, you have to be careful when you start a boycott, because you have to control. If you don't control the means of production, then the boycott is not gonna be sufficient. It's not gonna last long. Because then what's next? If Walmart does it, or find out someone that and Walmart does it. Like Krabs is a little bit simpler because people buy crabs at a convenience, but it's not something like toilet paper or water, pardon me, or things that we need daily. We don't need crabs daily, but we need certain things, essentials daily. So when we take that approach to Vince's crab shop, then we have to be prepared to take that approach across the board.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And if we're not, and if you don't control the means of production, you don't control wholesale, you don't control, because we're approaching it from a perspective of retail. But it's deeper than just retail. It's wholesale, it's production, it's distribution, it's warehouse. You know, it's a chain. And if you want to be effective, you have to be effective all the way through, not just from a retail perspective.
Absolutely. I totally agree. But I need to know, where do we start? Because I hear you saying that it's on a bigger platform. It's, mm-hmm. it starts small, but it mm-hmm. expands and it goes out wide, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But where do we start? Because we see, go ahead. You want to speak on it, Rennie?
I do.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, JR, as far as the production and all that. But to me, to answer your question, Marlene, where does it start? It does start with our dollars, even if it was Walmart. Because if you think about boycotts of the past, especially the one, I guess I'm going to say started with Rosa Parks, because that was the face of that boycott. Mm-hmm. Those people didn't have, a lot of them didn't have cars, but they sacrificed. It's just what the Black community is willing to sacrifice. Okay. And that's one thing, not only Black people, but all people are not comfortable doing, sacrificing, because everything is so convenient now. If we pull our dollars back, even from Walmart, they would even make money games, but you have to have the discipline to do that. And a lot of people, it's even with the Chinese, the Koreans, you know, we know that when we sit in their nail salons and all that, when they start talking in their language, 9 times out of 10, they're talking about us, you know.
Right.
But we continue to go, and we'll complain about it amongst each other. Or when they give us attitudes, you know, we might get mad or whatever, but we continue to go. Even if not to that one, but we'll go to another one. You have mm-hmm. to sacrifice, and that's where it starts. And as far as the crab shack, good, that is a small, not saying a small thing, but that's something local that you all can do.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not in Baltimore, I'm in Alabama, but that's where you can start, withholding your dollars from people, whether it's Walmart, GM, whoever it is, because it's already been proven that we make up trillions of dollars of the economy. Black people do. Right, so if they don't have our dollars, they're going to have to change. They're going to have to shut down. But we have to, as a people, be willing to sacrifice. And that's something that our forefathers did. But the generations after that don't know how to do.
Okay. I hear you. And I agree. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Kelly, you want to chime in on that?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to say that I was not expecting Baltimore to move as fast as they moved today, as far as with showing up, with spreading word. So I want to say, like, that's a major step from Baltimore.
Absolutely.
I did watch the live. It was a bit of emotional overkill. But I get the fact that people are frustrated, and boycotts and showing up to establishments, like, this is new for a lot of people.
Right.
A lot of people have not stepped up like this and voiced their opinion like this. So it's almost expected for people to be all over the place. And because this situation was put together so fast, I want to say it was probably put together in like less than 2 hours.
Overnight.
Then you had all kind of people up there, and not any, I don't really want to say leaders, but I guess I could say that. You didn't have any leaders up there trying to gauge things.
Right.
You did have one person up there, and he does a lot for the community, but I even think that his message was kind of sideways, because he spoke on suggesting that they should close their business for a few days.
Right.
The community should come back and negotiate. And I was just like, I don't think when it comes down to racial establishments, there is a negotiation. I think that the end of the conversation should have been, you know, thank you for your prayer, but you're not getting another dollar from any Black person ever. So I am glad, number one, that today they didn't sell a crib to not one Black person. And also their business was tainted all over the internet.
Yes.
So I think it does start there. I think we also have to realize that, again, these issues run deep, and we are really just starting to be able, at least in my generation, we just starting to really be able to get out there and say our piece. So it's going to take step by step action. Like, we're not going to jump out there. Although we could take down a Walmart, but at this point, like, it's baby steps.
Absolutely.
So, and another thing that I did today was, not only did I spread the information about Vince's crib, but I was tagging Black crib owners all day.
Yes.
I know a lot of Black owned spots. That's cool. So my main thing was, I'm taking Black crib owners all day. And what I saw from all of those establishments were, thank you, we're at an overload pretty much. So it was just like, today we stopped the dollar and we spent the dollar with Black people. So to me, that was a major win. Even if it was disorganized up there, like, they accomplished something today. So I hats off to everyone who participated in that.
Absolutely. Yes. And let me say, I'm not saying that I was that I don't think they should have gone. I'm glad they went. I'm so glad they went. But what I'm saying is, when we show up moving forward, I think we need to have a little more structure and a better plan, because it was a lot of raw emotion, a lot of passion there. Mm-hmm. And what we can't afford is for another Floyd incident to happen.
Yeah.
And we were lucky, we were blessed that nothing transpired in a negative light from their gathering there, because there was some video footage that things could have gone left. Things almost went left real quick during some of the turns of events there today. So I'm just saying, moving forward, what can we do differently to make sure that, because we already know first of all, that's the beauty in us. That's the beauty in the African-American culture. We are emotional. We are passionate. I know me, I'm a Leo. I'm passionate about what I believe in. And so when you take that kind of emotion and mix it in with what's going on right now, that cannot always turn out so well. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we cannot have these little fires starting everywhere. Mm-hmm. What can we do to make sure when we go out there, we representing our message, we're getting our point across without yelling and, I mean, just asking for things that's not even reasonable, because they were asking for that man to come out there and apologize to them.
I mean, anybody in their right mind wouldn't have stepped out of there in front of a crowd of people who's pissed, and rightfully so. He knew they had a reason to be as angry as they was. He might have tried to play it, you know, he was wrong, and he was caught with his hand in the cookie jar. So of course he gonna try to lie his way out of it or make himself not look as bad as he really was looking. No one wants to look bad publicly, and he was looking bad. So I was like, please don't send that man out there. Because, like I said, people was in their emotion. It was raw. It had just happened. I woke up like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and saw it. And by the time I went back to sleep and woke back up at 7 o'clock, oh my gosh, people was going. My phone had like so many messages, you know, on there. So I don't want to take up all the time talking, but I'm just saying, where do we go from there?
Let me jump in, even though I don't know if I'm really supposed to be talking. First off, I want to just say congratulations to you on your new podcast. It's definitely a big deal. I'm definitely proud of you. But I do want you're welcome. I do want to jump in and say that, first off, we don't need the apology because you are showing us who you are. And, and we need to really take heed to that. But we definitely, going forward, you know, to your question, we definitely have to strategize. Like, strategy is number one. You have to be organized no matter what it is that you go have, you know, that you go to do. You have to know, okay, what is the goal that we are going, you know, to the point that we are going to get across here today? And then what are the outcomes that we want to see? Like, you have to have a plan. Planning is key to anything that you do. So the first question is, okay, who is going to be the leader? You know, everybody can't speak at once. Who's going to be the leader?
Right.
What are we going to say? What is it that we're asking for? How much time are we giving them? When do we want to see it? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is the goal when we get here? Because and I'm all for marching. I'm all for protesting. I'm all for speaking up, showing up in numbers. I'm here for it. But when you get there, when you walk away, what is it that you have done? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is it that you have accomplished today? Because I don't want to just march and then nothing changes tomorrow. I don't want to just show up and then no change comes.
Things go back to
normal. Things go back to business as usual. People forget that, you know, this person has said this and said that, and then we're back at square one spending our money when we can be spending our money. Right now, I'm sitting in a car wash. I'm going to put money in the black man's pocket. You know what I'm saying? I supported a couple of black businesses.
Hello?
Yeah. You still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, we're all still here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think we lost Shelly, but if she can...
Yeah, you piggyback off of what she was saying. Uh-huh. I think it's something that I don't want to say it was an issue. It was one of those things where you gave so much of a economic loyalty to somebody to begin with that you feel a sense of betrayal. Now that's a cultural thing, because culturally you don't have to tell a group or a demographic how to move. We lack a level of culture.
Absolutely.
That will push us in the direction to argue an example. Culturally, when December 25th come around, you have to tell anybody to celebrate Christmas. They just do. It's just something that they were raised to do. Or when Halloween come around, or 4th of July come around, these different holidays come around, people have culturally been ingrained from a national standpoint, but from a demographic of black people or a demographic of a religious standpoint. You know, you take the Jewish community, they celebrate Hanukkah. So this, you know what I mean? So those things that are culturally ingrained in people, because 10 years ago we were saying by black. 5 years ago we were saying by black.
Right, but you gotta remember we don't have a culture for real.
We don't have a culture. That's the problem. So if you don't have a culture, is a common customs that are already in place that solves problems before problems even arise. So if you don't have a culture, you're going to have people over here doing one thing, then you're going to have a group of people over here doing another thing. Nobody's going to be on one accord.
That's true.
So we have to develop a code of conduct amongst us, and we have to use our economy, that disposable $2-3 billion or whatever the case may be,
yeah,
and fund and finance our agenda.
Okay.
Through our politicians. You take an economy and you back your politicians. Your politicians are the ones that influence the community. Your politicians are the ones that influence, that fund the the city council funds the police.
So let me stop you right there, because put a pen right there for me, because that's the perfect place I want to land right here, right now, because we just coming off the cusp of a election, right? We're waiting for, because mm-hmm. of the pandemic, everything has been mm-hmm. held up. We're waiting for some final counts. I think they're predicting mm-hmm. that the final counts will be in by June the 12th, right? And we'll know mm-hmm. officially who won in this election. And then we have the election coming up in November where it'll all become final, right?
Right. Which I want to touch on too.
So my question is then, how does the African American community look going forward when it comes to elections? So we know that a lot of people showed up because of this. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of protesting. We just had Breonna. Her last name slips in my mind, but Breonna Taylor was murdered in her bed, sleep mm-hmm. in the middle of mm-hmm. the night. Mm-hmm. You can't get no more innocent than that. This child's life was taken. This young woman's life was taken. What are we going to do moving forward so far as our political officials and how they move the armed forces in our cities, in our community? How do we pressure them? How do we make them change policies that make them protect us and stop preying on us?
Stop affiliating yourself, aligning yourself from a loyal standpoint to a political party, a political person. You are supposed to be, we're supposed to be loyal to an agenda. Politics is about who gets what, how does goods and services get distributed. That's what politics is. Now, if the way things are in Baltimore, if you win this primary, you're going to probably win the general election, because no Republican stands a chance in a Democratic ran city. That's a problem right there. We are loyal. We give our loyalty to a party, our loyalty to people, and in return, we don't get anything out of it. That's what politics is. It's quid pro quo.
Well, something. Normally we do, but you got to remember, we got a Republican governor right now, so somebody swayed over. Not all the Republicans put him in office, because we have a predominantly Democratic African American community in the state of Maryland, but we have a Republican governor, so somebody went over.
Yeah, we tend to get Republican governors every so often. We had early, about 10 or right. 15 years ago. But as far as the mayor of Baltimore, which is really getting the brunt, they get the brunt of anything that goes wrong in the state, Baltimore is probably at the center of it. We haven't had a Republican mayor in about 50 or 60 yeah. years. The city council, all of them are Democrat. Not to try to sway nobody to vote one way or the other, but just that a politician should always be campaigning for your vote. And you campaign for someone's vote by having it. Well, you don't have to have an agenda for them. They need to have an agenda for you if you're a politician. Mm-hmm. But we have to put our money, an economy builds an agenda, and an agenda gets forwarded to the politician. And the politician, by way of that agenda and by way of that economy. But I'll give you another example. When you have police misconduct
mm-hmm.
and someone has a settlement come out, you got police department, Baltimore City Police got to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, whatever the case mm-hmm. may be. That tends to come out of taxpayers' pockets, which in turn perpetuates the problem, because police aren't really held accountable. The police as a whole isn't held accountable. And you have, because you can easily fire one or two police officers, but the culture is not, the culture isn't changed. Mm-hmm. You understand? Right. Because no one is economically being held accountable. If they were furloughed, you go to the city council, because the city council, they fund, they put the budget up for the police department. So if you go to the city council and say, if you want my vote, then these things are going to have to change when they come to police. Not just marching and emotional. No, this is a strategy. If you turn around and something happens where the police department is held liable, it comes out of their budget, their pockets, their money, their checks. Then you'll have people thinking twice. But when they don't, when they know they're going to get a whole paycheck at the end of 2 weeks and they get all the overtime that they want and they are not economically affected by their behavior, because there's two ways of dealing with things. You can deal with things through violence and you can deal with things through economics. Right. And violence is kind of out of the question because you don't, you can't, is this not, you just can't go up against an army when you don't have, especially in the economy. Right. So you have to approach it from an economic standpoint. Right. You go, you say, look, you want my vote? This is what this needs to be. And we don't do that. We just vote for who we're familiar with. And we vote for who we're familiar with for years and years and years on end. And then we don't associate politics with policy. We don't associate politics with our day-to-day activities in our life. We don't associate politics with our quality of life. We don't put the two together. Right. If you put the two together, the same way we got the police to take a knee and all of these different things, but where was your city council members for certain districts? Where was your delegates? Where were those people? We just had an election, so where were those people out there in the middle of all of this going on? Now I did some research and I found out that the district, the area that the guy George Floyd was murdered in, I found out what city council in Minneapolis represented that district. And I say, oh, this is this person. Her name is Alexandra Cano. She's Hispanic. And I say, I'm like, when are people gonna say this person's name? When is she gonna be held accountable? When is she gonna come out and speak to the people? The governor, the mayor spoke to the people, but that city council member of that particular district
never came out.
And I'm like, well, why isn't the person that representing that district, why isn't she being held accountable? Where's her position on this? So we just don't hold the right people accountable. The police department they don't really answer the public. They answer to the city council. The answer is that's who picked the police commissioners. That's who fund their budget, those people. And we vote for them every single 2 to 4 years. We vote for people who send people out to violate
right. So let me ask. So Kelly, where are we going forward politically? What are we going to make our politicians do? What's going to happen?
I want to say that I think where we can start at is getting information out into the community. And I think that everyone can do that on their part, because I guarantee like a mass majority of people don't know that information, JR, did you just say it? So it's like a lot of us are not informed, and it really needs to be broken down to them, because we didn't grow up really learning about that in depth when it comes to politics. Mainly what we were taught is the mayor, the governor, and the president. Like, and there are so many other factors that play a powerful role and literally making the decisions. And it's like people don't know that, and people aren't connecting that. So I think first and foremost, the most simplest and realistic way to start to see a change is to start to give out information to people, whether it's you talking to who you're talking to, you creating a blog, you reaching out to these major blogs and asking them when those elections come around every 2 to 4 years, hey, listen, this is some information that we need to get out, especially tapping into Murder Inc. on Instagram. Mm-hmm. That target audience and on Murder Inc. is one of the most important audiences in Baltimore. To be honest,
it's everything.
You got drug dealers on there, You got addicts on mm-hmm. there. You got murderers yep. on there. You have everyday citizens yep. on there. So that Murder Inc.'s platform is so powerful. Like, honestly, and just to go back to what we were originally discussing, Vince's Crab House went up on Murder Inc. today. So a mass majority yeah. of those people that went up there, they were probably Murder Inc.'s people. So
yeah.
we got to think about how do we reach people who are uninformed, which is the mass majority of Baltimore City. A lot of these people have no idea who their city council is, what they can do.
What even they district don't know what they is. In.
They don't know that stuff. So it's like we have right. to break it down to them on a much, much smaller scale before you get into who's funding what and breaking that, like that type of stuff. They have to know mm. the basics and they don't know it. And whether it's right. a fault to their own or not, it is up to us people who are aware of things like that to give out that information. So going forward politically, I know for myself, I'm going to do some more digging into people. Cause I know when I was filling out that ballot, there were some people, I had no idea who they were. So it was like,
never saw them before. Never heard the name.
I have no idea what they, I was Googling before I was filling out my ballot. So I know people like yep. myself that probably didn't even Google. They did it. Pick ABC, like that's what's going right. on there. So the lack of information and people that do have that information, they got to be willing to give it up and they got to be willing to be patient and they got to be willing to break it down in the most simplest terms that they can, because people literally have no idea what's going on. So
right, they don't even know what to ask from the exactly. city council. Their city council representatives. They don't even know what to ask. They don't even know what policies the city council people exactly. support. And because when it comes to politics, there's always somebody sitting across the table that politician have to shake hands with and make deals with. And so they are supporting those other politicians that make the bigger calls and make the who write the policies and make the decisions and do the voting on the policies to put the policies in place. So therefore you need to know your city council, your delegate. You first got to start with even knowing what district yep. you live in.
As simple as that. What district do I live in, and what is the job of a city council person? Like that simple question right there. Seriously, a lot of us do not know, and I say us because there's still a lot of things about politics in the city that I don't know about. So, and I know a little bit more than the average person, and that's not a lot, honestly. So it's like information.
We got homework to do.
And that starts with literally giving out information, starting on your Facebook, starting on your Instagrams, creating a podcast, going live, just giving a little mini tutorial. People will tune in because people right now are quote unquote waking up and they want to see what's going yeah. on. So it's like we got a duty. We have something that we have to do, each and every one of us. So that's my thoughts on going Absolutely. Forward.
Brenny, what's your thoughts on politically? What we doing?
I agree 100% on what everyone is saying. And I do feel the first thing that needs to really be done is to stress the importance of voting.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a lot of young people who don't bother to vote. They feel like it's not going to make a difference anyway, or don't even register to vote.
No.
And if they do, they're basically, if they vote, they're voting in the presidential election. They're not voting for, like you said, city councilmen and, you know, the other smaller elections.
And the primary elections, right.
Yeah, they're just kind of overlooked. So like Kelly said, if you're getting on Facebook and whatever other social media outlets, pamphlets, you can call meetings. You know,
community meetings.
Want just like, mm-hmm. yeah, new, just, I don't know, like if in certain neighborhoods or certain sections, like if they have community rooms, I mean, you know, and just call meetings mm-hmm. and really inform people, because information is the key. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know, but you have to get them pumped up to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get pumped up to vote, then they feel like, okay, well, I can make a difference and my vote is counting. And once you do that, and then you can kind of steer them in the direction of getting people in there that's going to be for the people and holding people accountable, you know, and really letting the politicians know on the local levels, we see you, we put you in here, and this is what we we expect from you, ABCD, you know, because some people will get seats and everything just to hold an office for prestige in their own minds or whoever, you know, because people don't hold them accountable, so they can do whatever or not do whatever, but they have to get the importance of voting. That's the number one step. At least that's what it is here in Alabama, because some people, you know, a lot of them, they'll go ahead and vote in like the presidential elections. But when it comes to the other elections, they don't show up.
Right, right.
You know, and that's why these southern states stay Republican.
Right, right. And
that's why.
I totally agree with everything everybody's saying, because we just had, we just lost Congressman Elijah Cummings. So when he passed away, his seat became available. So we had to have, because that's not an appointed seat, that's an elected seat. They had to have another election to have that seat filled. People didn't even vote. People didn't even vote. Your congressman is who out there making the policies happen. That is one of the most important. The presidency, they said it so many times when Obama was in office that it made you, it should have made you sick to your stomach, because you heard it all the time. The president is the head of the country, right? He runs our government. But his power sits in that congressional office. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even vote. We can't.
They don't know that. Stress the importance of that. Yeah. They, you know, because a lot of them, like Kelly said, they don't have the information. They don't know. The only thing they've heard growing up with their mamas and daddies, whatever, is the president.
Right. Right.
So anything under him, or maybe the mayor, like in the more northern states, you know, when it comes to black mayors and stuff like that. Now it's coming down to southern states too now, but that's all they really know about. Some people don't even know who the governor of their state is.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just information. It's information.
Lack of information is definitely one thing. So that means we all have a responsibility. So on our social medias, we got to come out of our comfort zones. We got to start making posts, telling people to get up and vote, and explaining the voting process to them, explaining to them that it's more than just signing a piece of paper and getting a voter's card and saying, hey, I'm a registered voter. It's more than just showing up on the primary elections when we voting in presidents. And if it's a president that we kind of ain't, you know, too worried about, if they don't make too much noise about it, we don't even get all excited about that. We only get excited when there's the first black president, or you know what I'm saying? When the whole world get in an uproar about this person that we don't like, then people might get a little more interested. Like when we get people like 45 in there, the world is, you know, they involved now, but we got to be involved all the time. We have to get excited all the time. We have to stay excited, because we should not be here still today. It blows my mind that we are still here today, fighting for something as simple as a freedom of right to be a human being. We still fighting to be human beings.
What that says is that we're going down the wrong road. We're using the wrong strategy. We're using strategy that we're comfortable with, but we're not using strategy
that's effective.
So if we still having these same conversations that we've had 50 years ago, then it's time to take a look at what we've been doing, the tactics we've been using, and we have to kind of readjust, and we have to stop using 1960s tactics in 2020. It's just not going to work anymore, not the way that it worked back then, if it worked back then, to be honest.
I gotta pay homage where homage is due. It worked. But it wasn't supposed to stop.
Yep, I agree with that.
The work was supposed to continue. We stopped.
Yeah. People get comfortable. They gain a little ground and be like, okay, well, now we can go into restaurants now. Yep. We can go wherever we want. So we're comfortable now. Oh, we made it. But they're not looking at the bigger picture. That's why I say sacrifice comes in. And that's one thing that a lot of people I mean, including myself, I don't want to be inconvenienced. I don't want to, you know, sacrifice, but that's exactly what it's going to take. Yep. And like you said, with our original question, it is going to be the black dollar. I've seen so many, and you know, Marlene, I don't even be on social media, but I'm scrolling through these last, you know, week or so, and I'm seeing so many companies coming on Instagram talking about, we staying with you, like letting them know we staying with you, because they don't want to lose us. They don't want to lose us. My cousin has sent me a text message, all these companies just supposedly supporting Trump. And Wendy's was one of them. Said, and next thing I knew,
nope.
Talking about the y'all got that's right. We not supporting no Trump. We didn't give him one. You know what I'm saying? That's holding them accountable, putting them out there, exposing them. Because we're the ones eating out.
Yep.
Like in Baltimore, y'all eat them crabs.
Yeah, we love crabs. We love crabs. Oh, that hurt my soul. You know that hurt my soul today. And
that bus boycott was probably one of the most effective that I know about. If anybody else know, you know, whatever. But that change, that's when the change came, because we stopped riding the bus. People were walking.
Absolutely.
Carpooling.
All that. Yep.
Miles, and it wasn't like across the street, you know, but they sacrificed that type of
stuff. We don't want to sacrifice.
We don't want to be inconvenienced. We're gonna run down here
change
to this store because
never comfortable.
We are the biggest consumers in the world for everybody else except for ourselves, and nobody else really has respect for us.
I agree.
Because I think that they don't respect black people, because black people, a lot of times, it's like what were people out there today for? They were more hurt that the loyalty that they give to someone wasn't reciprocated. So it gets to the point where you say, are you looking for love in the wrong
places? Looking for love
places?
In all the wrong places.
Now, you understand what I'm saying? So now you turn around and you say, well, what is the goal going forward? What was the goal during the Montgomery bus boycott? To sit in the front of the bus. But here's the thing. We had our own bus companies back then. And because we had our own bus companies, and once they integrated the buses, then that kind of put that economically hurt black-owned bus companies. That economically hurt things that were black-owned.
Exactly.
By force, it hurt black businesses back then. So now you look at now and you say, well, what do you really want from events at the end of the day? What do you really want politically from people at the end of the day? What is your agenda? Sometimes you don't have an agenda. Sometimes you just say, I want to be liked and accepted and respected, because at the end of the day, you spent all these years, these decades, these centuries making me feel like this. The only way that I can feel human is if the people who relegated me to this particular point in society will acknowledge me. No other group does that but us. Now, if you take a look at, what was my point? If you take a look at going forward at election, voting, okay, we talk about voting. People are disillusioned with the voting process because they don't see an association with voting and benefits. They just see an association with voting and obligation. You can't guilt people. Feel we're almost guilted in the way, you know, your grandparents voted, you fought for this right to vote, they fought for that right to vote. So it's almost out of guilt that you go and vote. And I did my part. I don't care about who the candidates are. I don't care about my grandparents voted Democrat. Whoever's name is beside the Democratic Party, I'm going to vote that person, and then I'm done with it. And then you get back into the life and society, and you see that there's a disconnect. Why does my community look like this? Why is it crime like this? Why is the unemployment like this? And then you say, well, I voted. It don't make a difference. If I can't associate voting, if you go in the store and you pull money out and you hand the cashier money and you don't have anything in return, that doesn't make any sense. But we do it every time with our vote. So we have to take our economy. Our economy is what dictates politics. That's why when you go to vote, you look at the candidates, you look at the issues. Like, where did this issue come from? Where did this become a problem? When did this become a problem? You starting to look at all these. It ain't just candidates you vote for. You vote for a different policy. You vote for, well, this money's going to be appropriated to this to save the Walters Art Gallery and all these different places and things. Like, where did right. this come from? Who made this an issue? People with money say, "I want this right. on the ballot," and let right. them vote for it. That's what they do. They fund their agenda. So by the time you get to the voting booth, you're voting for someone else's agenda. You're voting for someone else's politics. You're voting for someone else's community.
So how do we shift that, though? That's what I'm saying. How do we shift that?
You have to put an economy behind your agenda. You have to formulate an agenda. Say, for Bel Air Edison, I want Bel Air Edison to look like this. For Park Heights, I want Park Heights mm-hmm. to look like mm-hmm. this. And then you have to get the people have to be. That's why I go back to culture. If you go to certain cultures, there isn't all people all over the place. The problem is getting people to be on one accord. That's a cultural thing. You come up with something, and then people are like, "Well, I don't want to do it like this. I'm going to do it like this." Culturally, there's no question. You don't question the culture because we grew up in it. No one questions right. whether to put a Christmas tree up or not. They just do it. When you're talking about an agenda for black people in the hood, you have to get the community. And sometimes you got to start small. Sometimes you have to start in a 4-5 block radius and make that yeah. work with your economy. You're not gonna do it overnight. You have to do it in a small increment. Mm-hmm. So when grassroots. Other people see something is working, they say, "Well, what are they doing that's working over here? Why is their grass green? Why does this little 4-5 block radius seem to be crime free and everybody seems to be working and driving nice cars and having nice businesses?" You have to look in that area and say, you have to start off in that kind of area and say, "This is what we're gonna do for this block." Or for these 4 blocks. If you be honest, we don't really have communities. We have neighborhoods. Now, when you take a look at what the businesses that are in your community, they are the ones that run your neighborhood because they're the ones that bring the money in. They're the ones, the liquor stores, the convenience stores, the gas stations, they're the ones that bring the money in. So politicians are going to cater to the people who's bringing the money in, the people who have jobs, the people who pay business tax and things like that, because their economy, people who don't look like us, people who don't live in our neighborhoods, don't have a vested interest in us.
So then that sounds like we got to stop letting them come in our neighborhoods then. Or we have to be the owners of them in our neighborhoods like it used to be back in the day.
Yes.
Or you make them invest. If you want to make money in our neighborhood, this is what's going on. We need X amount yeah. of dollars from you. If you got go in the liquor store, look, this neighborhood, we need to start doing X, Y, and Z in this neighborhood. We need your investment. We need your contribution. The people that live here is putting up some money, so you do business here. You have to contribute too, or we're not gonna come into your business no more, and then we're gonna make you have to close your business down and make you sell it to us for a discount. And then we own our own business back. We get our businesses back like that. But we have to start holding business owners, people who do not look like us, that's in our community every single day. They come in, they open up at 7, they close at 12. We're there all day. We go in and out, whether it's Chinese tour, whether it's the fish and chip spot, whether it's the convenience store, the liquor store, all of these different places that's in our community, we have to make them invest. You here, you got to come in and invest. We have to have an agenda first. We can't go to them and just say, "Just listen, you want to be in our neighborhood? The unemployment rate in our neighborhood is this much. You have to start hiring our people. We live here. We need jobs. You're here, you're making all this money, you're putting your kids through college. You have to start hiring us." Yeah, because the police is not there to protect us. They're there to protect business owners. If you don't own a business, they're not really there. They're there to protect them exactly. from you. You understand what I'm saying? That's how they look at it. These are the business owners. These are the people that's contributing. These are the taxpayers. These people that live here, they don't have jobs. They don't have opportunity. They're going to be the ones that we have to protect the business owners from. The business owners don't own nothing. I mean, the business owners don't contribute nothing. So now we have a situation where you have a balance and trade deficit.
You take all our money. They live off of two incomes. They're living off of 100% of their income and 98% of our income, because 2% of our income stay in our community. 98% of it goes outside our community.
Absolutely. And we have got to change the trajectory of those dollars. Absolutely. Listen, you guys not going to believe this, but we've been on here for almost an hour. And I tell you, I am just excited. I'm ecstatic. I thank you all so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. But we're going to put a pin in it. This is not the end, because that's what this platform is about. This platform is about living in the now. I'm so tired of hearing people talking about yesterday. We are in this right now. How do we move forward right now? How are we going to plan the future for our children, our children's children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren? What is that wealth? What is life with wealth and health and our economy for the future? What does that look like? Because we finally have the ear of the world. This movement right here is the pulse of our country right now. It's the pulse of our country. So everybody is listening to the heartbeat of it. It is up to us to band together and do the very things that we talked about, making that agenda, making that sacrifice, and have a code of conduct. And educate. That is the key. Educate, 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 educate. We have to educate our people. And that's every last one of our responsibilities. That is not the responsibility of no one person. That is the responsibility of every African American breathing and living from this day forward. That's our responsibility. My whole take on this whole movement that we're in right now is, it's not going to change overnight. It's not going to change in one conversation. It's not going to change in one decision. It is going to take a joint effort. And it starts with us. We need it to spread out to everyone else, but we've already seen some of the kickback from others who is not excited about our movement. But it definitely has to start with us.